I'll just be talking about what's most alive today for me. What I got to thinking about as I was lying awake in a hell realm last night, which I will tell you about, is what it is that we actually get out of doing this practice. That, you know, we're often fond of calling this a kind of bait and switch, that often the things that we want out of practice, zazen, we don't end up getting when we actually sit down and do it. So, I mean, certainly I came to this practice wanting a calmer mind and didn't get that. And in fact, when I started in particular, it seemed like my mind went completely wild. And now it goes wild less often, but last night, there I was. Want to suffer less. I don't know. there's still a lot of suffering in the world, and certainly in my world. Particular things, I would like not to be angry. Well, that doesn't seem to do it. So I was thinking, well, what is it? Is there anything that's not a bait and switch? Is there anything that we aspire to that we really get in this practice? And in my hell realm last night, I decided that perhaps what's not a total unrealistic fantasy is the aspiration we have to more fully experience our lives, to be less on automatic pilot and more present to how the universe manifests right here, right now, in us, through us. So I'll tell you about my hell realm. I have a lab group, we have office space. And I learned a couple months ago that another group needs space, and we needed to kind of compress and squeeze in and make room for another group to come and work alongside us. And I was trying to be a grown-up about it and say, okay, I'll take one for the team. I know that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's important to share. And I was telling myself all the right stuff. And then yesterday was the first day when the new people were in our office space, right there with us. And I found myself just so angry and resentful and trying not to be. And so I played it cool during the day, went home. And last night I thought everything was fine, and then at 1 a.m. I woke up, and I was just furious. I created this elaborate story of how I was going to go in and tell my superiors that this was completely misguided, and how could they do this to me and my group of colleagues, and I was feeling very self-righteous. And then, of course, I didn't want to be doing this. I thought, I'm giving a Dharma talk tomorrow, right? I'm like, I'm supposed to have my stuff together. And so I was feeling doubly sorry for myself, because I was, you know, clearly this practice had not done me any good. And I was then I was trying my Zen tricks. I was going to focus on my breath for a while. And I was just furious. And my heart beat, and yeah, my heart was racing. And I said, okay, I'll just go eat. So I had some yogurt, 2 a.m. And it gets to be... So, and I kept thinking all the while, this is it? This is life? You know, we read this morning in the Bodhisattva's vow, it says, you know, everything reveals the mysterious truth of the Tathagata. My tossing and turning, my feeling angry and petty, that's it? This truth never fails in every moment and in every place? That's it? So then, one of the things that also occurred to me last night was a play that I went to see a couple of months ago. A play that many of you probably know. It's the play Our Town by Thornton Wilder. And it's a high school chestnut. You know, you trot it out and do it in high school because it's got lots of parts, and it's really simple. It's about a town called Grover's Corners in New Hampshire. at the beginning of the 20th century, very simple, about these people's lives, growing up, getting married, having children, dying. And so we went to see it. And it was a wonderful production because the production was completely spare. They were just, the actors showed up kind of almost among the audience. There was no set to speak of. There were some tables and chairs so that, you know, you could see sort of the kitchen tables and some rows among the audience where people would walk along roads. But that was it. And the actors showed up in sweats and jeans. And so, and there was no special lighting. So there was just the audience was just as well lit as the actors. And so you were just sort of watching this thing unfold. And they did a beautiful job. They're very simple scenes about ordinary life. And in the midst of this ordinariness, you really began to care about these characters. But then, and you may remember this from Our Town if you've seen it, one of the main characters dies in childbirth. Her name is Emily. And so she goes to the graveyard in Grover's Corners. And in the graveyard, there are all these people who've died who are sitting in chairs who welcome her and talk to her about what it's like to be dead. And what they're thinking about is the weather and the lay of the land. And she's saying, yeah, but what about my husband and my baby? And I need to go back there. And they're saying, you know, it looks like it's going to rain tonight. And she's all hepped up and saying, I want to go back. Can I go back? And apparently, in Grover's Corners, you can, after you've died, go back for a day. You can pick a day in your life and go back. So Emily, and they warn her. They say, you won't like it. You won't like going back. And they say, at least don't pick a special day. Pick an ordinary day of your life and go back to that. So she decides to pick a day. She's a schoolgirl, you know, in her teens. It's like a Monday morning and everybody's getting breakfast and trying to get off to work and to school in this little 19th century kitchen in this small town. And so she goes back, and what you see, a curtain opens, and instead of everything being completely spare, you see this magnificent, simple but gorgeous set with everyone in full costume, a mother standing at the stove frying bacon and making pancakes, and a father running around trying to find his shirt because he's late for work, and a son complaining that he doesn't want to go to school. And Emily goes back to this, and it's just kind of a stunt. You're just flooded with sights and sounds. And literally, they found a way to make the smell of maple syrup come into the audience. And it was just, and the audience gasped. It was like, whoa. But that wasn't, what was so powerful was then what unfolded, which is Emily is standing there in the midst of all this hustle and bustle and trying and talking to her mother and talking to her father and her brother. And they're not looking at her or each other. Mother's frying the bacon and father's looking for his shirt and the son is kind of moping around. And she's saying, look, look, this is so amazing. And they are all on automatic pilot. And then she goes back to the graveyard and is just completely heartsick. And the internet is great. I pulled some quotes from the play off of the internet this morning after my sleepless night. And Emily says, very sadly, she says, goodbye to clocks ticking and mama's sunflowers and food and coffee, and new iron dresses, and hot baths, and sleeping, and waking up. Oh, Earth, you're too wonderful for anybody to realize you. And then this very sour guy, he's dead, but he's like, he's sort of saying, I told you so. He says to her, that's what it was like to be alive, to move about in a cloud of ignorance, to go up and down, trampling on the feelings of those about you, to spend and waste time as though you had a million years, to be always at the mercy of one self-centered passion or another. Now you know, that's the happy existence you wanted to go back to, ignorance and blindness. And I thought to myself, that's what this practice is about. It's about trying to take away, for moments at a time, this veil of ignorance, this veil of blindness, to just see how amazing it is. How amazing it is even to be lying awake, angry, unhappy, feeling like a victim. Even that. I saw a bumper sticker this week that said, "Congratulations, you've won the lottery. You were born." This idea that everything, when we place it next to not existing, all of the manifestations, including the miserable ones, including the mind states we want to get rid of, it's all miraculous. It's all it. And our aspiration then, although it might be to be calm or to have pleasant mind states, the real aspiration is just to live as fully as we can. And of course, it's a practice. We can't sustain it. Can't walk around all day thinking about the wonders of traffic noise and the miraculousness of people talking upstairs. We'd never get anything done. In fact, Emily Dickinson has this great quote. She says, "To live is so startling, there's hardly time for anything else." that we can't do that. That we have to, sometimes we have to be on automatic pilot, and then we wake ourselves up with practice. We go back into automatic pilot. We wake ourselves up, and it's all just, as Josh is fond of saying, the universe, universing. So I'll just end this with another quote from Thornton Wilder, the author of this play, who says, "We can only be said to be alive in those moments when our hearts are conscious of our treasures." And that's our practice, to keep opening our hearts over and over again. Thoughts? Questions?
I actually performed in our town when I was in high school. Yeah. I was unaware at the time that it was a Buddhist play.
It is a Buddhist play. It is such a Buddhist play.
And you know, this the theme of life and death. Sometimes practice, sometimes zazen, is described as dying, as the great death, and dying to our stories, dying to our fantasies about the way things can or should be. And in that dying, we are reborn into the startlingness of life. And getting caught in illusions and dying and being reborn is a continual practice. This is not a thing that happens once and then we're all set. What was that last quote?
We can only be said to be alive in those moments when our hearts are conscious of our treasures.
Yeah. So to not take this as a setting apart of these are the good moments and these are not the good moments. And if we're not alive, then we're screwed. But to take this as a call to constantly turn towards the great mystery of being, the great fact of isness, and to recognize that this is the good stuff.
Yeah.
was great. I heard a lot of very helpful reminders for me.
Mm.
And while you were talking about you know, what was going on for you last night, I was thinking the awareness of this is the life I get. This is the life I have. This is the one that I get to live.
Right.
Not that one over there that I wish was happening. You know?
Exactly.
The pain in my foot, the pain in my neck that's been caused by the pain in my foot. You know, all this, whatever it is that's arising right now, this is my life. This is the one I've been given. This is the one that I get to live, to truly live. And it sounds easy when you think of treasure as the good thing. You know, the happy birthday party, you know, with all the friends and family around, and it's wonderful cake and all that stuff. I was thinking when you read that last quote that for me, a lot hinges on how I define that word, treasure.
Yes.
You know, and what this practice helps me do is to broaden my definition of that word and to realize that, and what I love about this practice is this massively inclusiveness of all of it. You know, and when you said, really, this is it? This horrible feeling that I have, you know, it's like, really? And for me, the truth is that there's a great comfort to me when I realize, this is it.
Yeah.
This is it. Oh, great!
Yeah.
You know, there's another chant that we do, and one of the lines is, truly is anything missing? Nirvana is right here before our eyes.
Mm.
This very place is the lotus land. This very body, the Buddha.
Right.
You know, and I love that part of the chant. And I think that, you know, you're pointing to that again and again. Such a relief. Because if it was that I had to be over there and I had to be that way, and it didn't include pettiness. And it doesn't include my being resentful or angry or wanting to tell off my superiors.
Yeah.
If it didn't include that, then what? Where do I go? What do I do? What kind of life can I have?
Yeah.
It's all of it.
You know, and it's so... That experience of sort of relief is something I feel a lot, and for me there's like this switch point between realizing I'm trying to push something away. This is not it. This can't be it. This can't be. I'm not. This is not the mind state I sign up for, or the knee pain. And then once I make the container bigger, it's like, yeah, this is it. Come on in. That there's this. There's a literal physical sort of release for me that sort of is like what you said.
And important to recognize that one form that literal physical relief takes is, yeah, this is it. Ow!
Yeah.
Thank you. For me, I guess the question or still the trouble is, I certainly resonate with a lot of what you're saying, you know, being there and realizing, what have I been doing for the past 5 years if I'm sitting there angry at these people for just doing whatever they're doing, you know? And then the next day, realize, you know, or some, maybe at that, you know, some that time, that same night, realizing, oh, you know, this is it. This is just but I'm still angry.
Yeah.
It doesn't become good when I realize that. It doesn't become more comfortable. So what? So then what?
Yeah.
So answer that.
That's the practice. That's then what? Then just be there with that anger until, and then go on to the next thing, and you know, maybe you can, realizing that you encounter, you know, that situation, maybe when you go in Monday morning, now that you've gone through that, you're not gonna, you maybe do something, you know, to make it better, but maybe you just realize it's that was all nothing.
Mm-hmm. You just talked about my experience so far, which is that, you know, it's like sometimes, first of all, sometimes last night I thought, this is never going to change. I'm just going to be enraged for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And then I'm done. And then it subsided. And so what you were talking about, well, then the next thing happens. And yet the anger does come back. It came back even as I was telling you about it just now. And... you know, and
right, they are jerks.
I'm really right about this. And you know, but then also, I think this is the case. The last night, I was ready to like tell people off in ways that were going to be hurtful and very self-destructive. And my hope is that that's not going to happen on Monday morning when I go in, because of this. I've hopefully given myself a glimpse of more spaciousness around this.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, it's like you've opened up, and now you're able, when you encounter it again, to make this space for more to come.
Yeah, that's my hope.
Yeah.
And I want to comment on the, you said, okay, well, this may be it for the rest of my life. And important not to undervalue that step. That step is essential. That step is how we die to this to this moment. This is what Dogen says. He says, when it's cold, cold kills the monk. When it's hot, hot kills the monk. And to really surrender, to really fully fail into this moment as it in fact is. And turning towards it is, it has to not be, okay, come this way so you can go.
Right, right, right.
It has to be really letting it be. And then it does go. It does pass. There is a release. There has been every time so far. This might be the big one. And you have to be open to that reality too.
Oh no.
That was a lovely talk. I think there's one other gift in all of that, and at least for me, because of course in my case it keeps recurring, and now when I see other people and they do things that I don't like or I think are unethical, I see them as caught too in the same thing, because when you practice and you see what you're doing and you feel it almost as though it's killing you, then you see other people too in the same way. So I think it's the source of compassion.
Yeah, that is a hugely important point. And that is the Zen understanding of compassion. Compassion isn't a state, it isn't a thing we feel. It's a recognition of just how easy it is for us to get overwhelmed, overrun by greed, anger, and ignorance. And then when we see other people acting from greed, anger, and ignorance, we can go, oh, right, I know what that's like. And this is why it's so important we use the word evil in the Gatha of Atonement. All evil karma committed by me. because otherwise we're making evil into something that's not something committed by me. It's something done by evil people. But all evil in the universe is only ever this thing that Carol is pointing to, is only ever people getting caught up in, as Bob was saying, the automatic pilot of reactivity, again, of aversion, or of grasping, or of righteous certainty.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like now I, you know, in terms of what it's like to have people encroach on your turf and that feeling and what you want to do in response, like, I'm right in it. And it does, it allows for an arising of compassion that I couldn't fake, right? But boy, I really get why countries go to war.
Boy, the boy in Newtown who killed all those children. When I think how easy it is for me to get overtaken by anger, and then I look at him and are we so different?
There, but for the grace of God. Steve?
So, thank you so much for your talk, Bob. You hit on a topic that has been very much alive for me lately. Examining, you know, what exactly is it that I'm getting out of this Zen practice, and particularly in moments when I feel like I'm trapped in some familiar pattern of irritation or anger or, you know, whatever it is, and I think, oh my God, I've been practicing Zen all these years, and here I am, you know, this self-examination that's a part of this almost seems to be making things worse. It makes me more aware of this stuff going on, and I feel bad that I'm not able to get past that somehow. And
give me automatic pilot.
Yeah, yeah, and it was wonderful because it's nice to see, you know, what the other, you know, what is it that I'm wishing for, you know, that all that would just, you know, dim down, you know, and that I could just kind of ignore, you know, it's not that it wouldn't be going on, but I just wouldn't be paying so much attention to it.
Yeah.
You know, is that really a good thing? I think not.
Right.
But the other thing that comes up for me is this, I can easily hear it as I should just be more appreciative of the difficulties, you know, and it becomes then that I should have some means of you know, not getting so, you know, I should be a little more Zen about it and put, you know, get a little space around my bad feelings and really appreciate, you know, what's going on. Oh yes, this is it, you know. And I think, well, there should be this feeling of, well, you know, this is really okay to be all angry and upset and not being able to see. And yeah, I can see that going on, but it's really, you know, it's all that. And Tori says you would really appreciate that, isn't it? And it's important to not get the idea that that's what we're aiming for, you know, that these states are going to stop. You know, the goal is not that you know, we're going to attain something that's going to allow us to never feel that way anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not practicing with it just in the hope that it's going to go away. You know, it's can I, you know, can I be present with this stuff? And, you know, this is actually it. You know,
yeah.
it isn't. You know, if I do everything right, then
right.
You know, and I, there's something artificial about my giving this talk in that way, because I've already processed it
right,
in a certain way.
Exactly.
It's like, in some ways, what I wish I could have done is taken a video of me last night and
right.
shown you the mess.
Right.
You know, and because here I am telling you about it in a way that's a story.
Exactly.
And that it kind of can leave you with the impression of, oh, well, he's got it all worked out now, and
right.
it's okay. And
yeah.
boy, do I not have it all worked out.
Right.
And I'm going to get angry 20 minutes from now again about the same thing, and I'm going to be in it and lost in it.
So there's this processing that takes place after, you know, being in this totally stuck, angry, you know, how could this be happening to me? And then later there's a moment of expansion where, you know, where we can get a little different and maybe act a little differently, as you were saying. You know, getting that increased awareness around it is a wonderful thing. But in that moment, you know, that just isn't there. And to have the idea that we're going to attain some state of goodness where, you know, those things don't come up anymore is a very painful thing to do to ourselves, you know. Yeah. Because then when it does come up, we go, oh, you know, here it is again. And you know, why didn't I behave better this time?
And give voice to how we practice with that moment before we have any choice or space.
It's just, that's it. I mean, we're stuck there. It's being angry.
And in those moments of stuck, in those moments of just being angry, is there in those moments of just this sucks, is that inherently a problem?
No, I think there's an acceptance around, well, yeah, this sucks, and I can let it suck and not have to, you know, try and do something that'll make it not suck, because it's not my job to do something that's going to make this not suck.
Right. Let it suck when it sucks.
Right.
Buddhism. Yeah. Yeah, and recognizing the scope of our job, not your job, to cause there not to be suffering in life. Nicely expressed. And so as we when we conclude our Dharma discussion, we will be going back into Zazen walking meditation, and just some words about that. We can practice with outside sounds exactly the same way we practice with inner arisings. Inner arisings are not separate things from outside. Those are just things that capture our attention, and we discern that that's happened and bring our attention back to our Zazen, entrusting ourselves to this. And, you know, in the same way, we can see ourselves getting caught up and, oh man, don't they understand? We're trying to zen it up down here. And that's exactly what we're talking about. And find to meet that, to meet this moment of bowling alley, and not prefer moments of silence, or not prefer, or not be, not prefer our preferences, or be averse to our aversions, to just meet this moment as it in fact is. You know, and in a way, how wonderful that we get this focused time where we, you know, the reason we come together in a Sangha and we have a Zen center is because it's easier to practice together. This is as easy as it gets. And so how wonderful that in this maximally supportive circumstance, we can work with the very mind that causes all of our suffering, the very mind that leads to all karmic evil, the very mind that leads to great pain. So, gratitude even for the bowling, which has, and you see, the bowling has now stopped. Any other comments before we end? Thank you, Bob. And thank you, everyone.